Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Shaletta has the day off. Lindsey Brown is in. Our producer, Steve Thompson, in early today. And the Twins get started early as well. They'll be in Philadelphia. Game 161 of the season coming up tonight. Our lineup card at 4:30, first pitch just after 5 o'clock. Twins and Phillies close out the regular season tomorrow. Phillies on to the postseason. We'll talk more Twins a little bit later on. Don't forget Tech Talk at 3. Right now we're going to talk space flight with Stephen Clark, and he writes for Ars Technica. Stephen, always good to visit with you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Steve. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, there's always so much going on, and we should point out the first crewed mission for the Artemis program is coming up rapidly. We're learning more and more about it. It looks like 2026, this will be a go.
Indeed, indeed, Steve. This is going to be an historic mission. This will be the first time anyone has flown in the vicinity out to the moon since 1972. And NASA is planning on sending three astronauts, three Americans, one Canadian astronaut going with them, so a crew of four out beyond the far side of the moon. They will likely actually set the record for the most distant humans have ever traveled from the Earth. They'll go between 5,000 and 9,000 miles beyond the moon, depending on which exact trajectory they take. That's still to be determined. But they won't be landing, of course. That's still to come in the years ahead, potentially in the Artemis program. But they will set a new distance record, and it'll be really, really neat to see for those of us. I'm a longtime space enthusiast. I've been interested in space flight since I was a child, and born after all the moon landings occurred. So I'm eager to see a 21st century version of what it looks like to look back on Earth from such distances.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit older than you. And I was old enough to remember Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. I was just a little kid at my grandma and grandpa's house on Maryland Avenue in St. Paul. But that night in July of 1969, when I got to stay up late when Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. So I've been a fan ever since. It's interesting, though, that this program is kind of, will it continue? I know the hardware has been paid for. This is a goal for next year. But there's been a thought for a long, long time. It's very expensive. It's been delayed over and over and over again. That ultimately, will this program put humans back on the moon?
You know, that's a great question. If I had to bet right now, I would still say yes, because there is competition right now with China. China has a very credible program to develop new rockets, a new spacecraft, a new lander to go to the moon. And, you know, America, obviously, we went there 55 plus years ago with, I think, six landings on the moon. And so, of course, we've been there first. But I think it would not be a popular political situation for the leadership of the United States of either party for China to have a moon base and the United States to not have a moon base. And so I think as long as China stays on this path, I think the United States will. Though the question is in what form? There's, you mentioned the expense, the Space Launch System, which is this massive rocket that NASA has developed primarily in partnership with Boeing, is several billion dollars per flight, between $2 and $4 billion, depending on which source you trust most per flight. That is unsustainable beyond just maybe a handful of missions. So, you know, there are commercial alternatives out there that we may talk about in a moment, including SpaceX's Starship, Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket. These are the companies, of course, led by Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, that have lower cost options that could potentially be used to go to the moon with people eventually. But, you know, to go around the moon next year, the only rocket that realistically is going to do that is the Space Launch System, despite its expense.
Yeah, and there are challenges as well. Once you get there, how will they land on the moon? And SpaceX was contracted to build the vehicle, which would be a version of Starship that would actually bring astronauts down to the lunar surface. But we know where that is. They have a long way to go to get to that point.
Exactly. Yes. You know, Starship has now flown 10 times. The last one, the last launch, which you probably want to talk about, we can talk about it now or later, but was successful. And so that was a step forward, but there is a long way to go. They have a larger version of the rocket that's going to debut probably early next year, that is going to be testing some refueling technology in orbit that's untested, unexplored territory in terms of space technology to be able to refuel in space. And so, you know, I expect that to be a challenge for SpaceX. I think they'll get that resolved eventually, but I wouldn't bet on that going perfectly the first time, although you never know. So Starship, I think, is years away. I would hesitate to put a number on it, but I think for Starship to land on the moon, we're probably looking at toward the end of the decade is when I would suspect is the realistic chance of that happening. One thing I'll note is, you know, Elon Musk is all in on Mars. That's been his focus since founding SpaceX back in 2002, is to put humans on Mars and eventually build a settlement on Mars. And he's been talking, you know, that mantra he has continued to speak about this year. He hasn't really talked a lot about the moon program. So there are questions about SpaceX's long-term commitment to a lunar program as well, even despite the fact that they have a $4 billion contract with NASA to develop a lunar lander based on the Starship design.
Yeah, and it's always been Mars. And we will circle back around to Starship being developed on the Texas coast and what is next. There certainly have been setbacks. But a little bit more on Artemis. And this is directly tied to politics. Many of these big NASA programs over the years, going all the way back to Mercury, Gemini, and ultimately Apollo, that saw Americans on the moon with Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin being the first. And then beyond that, the space shuttle. Is this money is spent around, spread around over congressional districts all over the country? And that's what is probably breathing life into this, that there isn't a lot of political will to pull the pin on this, so to speak.
I think that's a very astute point, Steve. I think the spreading of the contracts around the country is partially, or maybe primarily by design, is to build and sustain a political support for the program. So, for example, the Space Launch System, the core of the rocket is built in Louisiana outside of New Orleans. The boosters are built in Utah. The upper stage is built in Alabama. It's launched from Florida. The spacecraft is built in Florida, designed in Colorado, and it's all controlled from Houston at the Johnson Space Center in Texas. So, you know, that's a bipartisan, you know, representatives that represent all those districts. Republicans and Democrats are represented in those places, and not to mention, you know, the Artemis program has Starship, of course, is tied to it. It's in Texas. It's, they have not the headquarters anymore of SpaceX, but a lot of the design work is done in California, so in the Los Angeles area. So, you know, red and blue districts are behind all of these elements.
Yeah, and that makes it, and then beyond that, all those subcontractors and suppliers, et cetera, you know, come from even other spots around the country as well, and that's been true for decades when it comes to NASA programs. So it will be a difficult one. And then, of course, you brought up China. They continue to move forward. There is talk that reusability will be part of their arsenal going forward. And that, once again, reusability and what SpaceX has been able to demonstrate with the first stage and what they're showing with Starship in a fully reusable system, ultimately, is a game changer as well.
Yeah. I just wrote a story about this getting it last week that, the U.S. military is concerned about once China is able to master reusable rockets. They have several different groups and enterprises in China that are working on different reusable rocket designs. And we'll see when one flies. But they are exhibiting a lot more commitment to reusable rockets than really anyone else in the U.S. other than SpaceX and Blue Origin. And so it'll be interesting to see whether the next company or next organization, depending on how you view it, because a lot of these Chinese outfits are state-owned, is a Chinese company the next organization that reuses a rocket, or will it be a U.S. company like Blue Origin? You know, we shall see. But using these reusable rockets where you land the first stage booster, do some minor refurbishment, reuse it, that really does two things. It lowers the cost per launch, and it makes the launch provider be able to launch more rapidly. So SpaceX is launching 4 or 5 times a week right now, and Chinese companies are building all new rockets each time, and they're actually able to get about half the launch rate. All of Chinese industry combined is able to get about half of the launch rate of just SpaceX. And and that's building new rockets, as I said, for each mission. Once they master reusable launch, China will be able to put a lot more things in space, and that will unlock things like, you know, a Chinese moon base and all sorts of military applications as well in orbit.
Yeah, and they have an operating space station. And from that, and the final point before we take a quick break and talk more about SpaceX and Starship, certainly a marquee program underway down in Texas, is that they are learning how to operate long-term in low Earth orbit and build systems that ultimately would take them the next step to the moon. But you've got to believe that they know what Elon Musk's goals are. They know Mars. That it wouldn't surprise me one bit that they're not going to stop at the moon, that China would love to be able to beat, if you will, the United States or the West to Mars.
Oh, I think there's no doubt about that, Steve. We don't hear China talk a lot about sending people to Mars just yet. In fact, we didn't hear China talk a lot about sending people to the moon until a few years ago. You know, they announced this program, I forgot what year, but 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, it was always kind of expected that China would go this route, but they announced the program and then they're off to the races. And it may be the same situation with a crew mission or human mission to Mars. One thing I'll note is China is developing a mission right now to go to Mars and pick up samples. It's a robotic mission, no people on board, to go out to Mars, pick up some soil, rock samples, and bring them back to Earth around the 2030-2031 timeframe. And by all accounts, they're going to, if that mission is successful, they will beat the United States and anyone else at that objective to be able to bring samples back from Mars. So that's not quite the level of putting a person on Mars, but certainly another feather in China's cap.
Yeah, but beyond that, learning the capability of getting there and returning is a huge part of the equation.
Yes. The round trip aspect has never been done before by anyone.
Yeah. So, quick break. We'll come back. Hopefully, you have a few more minutes. Stephen Clark joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. He writes for Ars Technica and covers spaceflight. And we will talk about the big Starship program. When is the next flight? The last one, number 10, was a success. A lot was learned. And after some major setbacks earlier this year, it looks like that program is back on track. We'll get the update from Stephen in a moment here on News Talk 830-WCCO.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stephen Clark joining us, Ars Technica. We're talking space flight. Always been a fan of this, and always good to visit with Stephen and get an update. And you can read his work at arstechnica.com. Stephen, let's talk about Starship. 2025 didn't start out very well for this big program and the Super Heavy booster and the top stage or ship. Disasters in the air, a disaster on the ground that just devastated a test site down on the Texas coast. Some major setbacks, but the most recent flight appeared to have a lot of positives as they try and bounce back and learn how to get this thing to fly consistently.
Yes, Steve. That mission back on August the 26th was a much-needed success for SpaceX. This was the 10th flight of Starship, and it came after those three mishaps in flight and the explosion on the ground earlier in the year. And this was the first time since last November, so nearly a year ago now, that SpaceX was able to get a Starship from the launch pad out to the Indian Ocean exactly where they wanted to splash down. So it was a pinpoint mission. Everything went very well. They got some data on the heat shield of Starship, which is something they've been wanting to try to get since January. They were never able to get far enough in the flight to be able to get to the reentry and splashdown portion, the landing portion of the mission. But on this mission, they did. And they learned that, some of the heat shield, they still do have some work to do on the heat shield, which is not entirely unexpected. And they put on some different types of tile designs. They kind of learned what worked and what didn't work. And we're going to see Starship fly again, it looks like, next month. Probably mid-October is with the target right now for flight number 11 of Starship. And they're going to hope to repeat a lot of what they did on the previous flight to show, like as you mentioned, that it's repeatable and consistent as they go into next year, which will involve even more ambitious and new tests that could be a challenge for SpaceX.
Yeah, and there's a lot of work to be done. We're a long, long way from a couple of things: refueling in low Earth orbit and humans being on board this thing. I mean, that still seems years off.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And, SpaceX is working on a version 3 of Starship. Right now they're flying version 2. Version 2 hasn't worked out all that well, other than the last mission. And version 3 is going to debut next year, and it's larger, and it has the ability to be refueled in orbit. And that is the next big thing for SpaceX, is to be able to demonstrate two Starships being in space at the same time in orbit. They'll dock and attempt to transfer, hundreds of tons of liquid oxygen and liquid methane, essentially liquefied natural gas, which are stored at very cold temperatures, below zero, cryogenic conditions. And there are a number of challenges. Docking just is the first one. They have to be able to connect fluid connections between the two vehicles. They have to be able to transfer propellant between the two vehicles. The approach that I understand they're using is actually not to use any pumps, which is actually kind of seems like an ingenious solution. No moving parts, really. But they're going to... They have to get the pressure right in each vehicle and use pressure higher pressure to push the propellant into the other vehicle, which is going to be at lower pressure in the propellant tank. And that all has to be managed nearly perfectly. The temperatures have to be at the right levels to be able to prevent, you know, things like gas bubbles forming in the propellant. Very, very, you know, advanced thermodynamics at work, all in zero gravity. Everything's weightless. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that all goes. And it's something that's never been attempted before by anyone in the history of spaceflight. And that's going to be a big challenge going forward.
Yeah, and there are a couple of things there. And I think about this as just an amateur observer. But when you start transferring all these fuels in low Earth orbit, and you have liquid oxygen and liquid methane, a mishap could be catastrophic for spaceflight going forward. If there is some sort of explosion or detonation or some sort of collision, it could create a massive field of space junk. And that's got to be part of the calculus in all of this.
I think it has to be, and that's something that really we haven't heard SpaceX or NASA, which is NASA's involved in this as well, talk about a lot. And, you know, those are good questions that I need to be asking going forward, because it's going to be in orbit. If this thing explodes or breaks up in orbit or collides during the docking or something, like you said, it's going to create all this debris that's going to stay in orbit for, depending on the altitude they're at, for weeks, months, years, decades. I suspect we haven't seen the flight plan for this first refueling demonstration next year, but I suspect they're going to be at a very low altitude, you know, probably 100 to 200 miles up, in which case if it does explode, it'll be below most of the debris. You never know, because an explosion could kick debris up to a higher altitude. But most of the debris would be below the International Space Station, at least, but, you know, it would stay there for probably months and, you know, would be a real problem for some period of time.
Yeah. And then, you know, this is a key to return humans to the moon, and then, you know, being able to master a refueling would make a trips, and I would say multiple trips to Mars, a whole lot easier. I mean, there's a lot kind of riding on this concept.
Yes. Starship really can't go beyond low Earth orbit, which is, you know, up to maybe 500 or 1,000 miles above the Earth without refueling. So to go to a higher orbit, you know, to put a satellite farther from the Earth, or to go to the moon, or to go to Mars, or any place else, they have to be able to refuel the starships in orbit. And to refuel a starship in orbit, it involves all these challenges that I spoke about a moment ago, but to be able to go to the moon, you have to refuel the you have to send up between 8 and 12 tankers, maybe a few more, less, maybe a few more, but at least a half dozen to a dozen or more tankers to be able to refuel a starship to go to the moon. So each, you know, they'll launch the starship that's going to go to the moon. They'll launch a storage starship, a depot basically in orbit, and they have to send up these successive tankers, you know, all in pretty short succession over a matter of days or a few weeks to fill up that depot. And then the depot will refuel the starship that's going to go out to the moon, for example, because just to get to orbit, the starship burns all of its fuel just to get to orbit. So when it gets to space after a launch in low Earth orbit, its fuel tanks are empty. And so it has to be refueled to be able to relight its engines and propel itself a little further out.
Yeah, it is a lot to consider. For sure. Fascinating, though. I love reading your work and love visiting with you here on the radio, Stephen. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for taking time.
Always a love to join you, Steve. Thanks for the invitation. Talk soon.
Stephen Clark, ArsTechnica.com. He covers spaceflight. He's been doing that work for many, many years. And this is a cutting edge of engineering and technology. For sure it is. 132. We will have an update on the weather. And we'll do that in a moment.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.